You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Four NASA astronauts aboard an Orion spacecraft are currently on their return trip to planet Earth, having just conducted a successful flyby mission to the moon. The mission brought humans within the vicinity of the moon for the first time in over 50 years, and when the four astronauts passed behind its far side, they set the record for the furthest distance that any human has ever traveled away from Earth. The test mission is paving the way for a manned landing on the lunar surface, currently scheduled for 2028, and eventually a permanent lunar base. This morning, I spoke to Josh Auraki, resident astronomer at Auckland Stardome Observatory, about the past, present, and future of lunar exploration. There's a historical predecessor for this mission in Apollo 8, which was similarly a manned spaceflight which circled the moon but didn't land in preparation for the future Apollo 11 landing. Could you give us a sense of why it's necessary to do this kind of flyby mission before attempting a landing? After all, we've already landed people on the moon six times at this point. How hard would it be to just do it again?
Apollo 8 is kind of seen as the predecessor of Artemis 2, and in many ways it is. It's a flyby mission. They have very similar kind of paths and trajectories. But I think, the main difference is that, the goals of Apollo and Artemis are really different. You know, with Apollo, they were these really short-term stays, flying around the moon, testing the systems, and then eventually landing with Apollo 11. But the goals with Artemis are different because, we're not wanting to go just for a few days, plant some flags and take some rocks. The goal is to eventually set up a base on the moon. You know, they actually want to have a lunar colony at the South Pole. So testing these systems is critical because, Artemis 2 is a test flight, and the following Artemis missions will then land. The technology obviously is way different. It's a lot safer, but it's also a lot more expensive. So they are comparable, but they're also very, very different missions in many ways.
Could you tell us a bit more about this permanent presence on the moon and the base on the South Pole?
Yeah, I mean, not just America, but I think many countries have said that they want to go to the South Pole. And the reason for that is because if you look at the way that the moon orbits and basically the way that the sun falls on the moon, there are these places at the South Pole which are basically permanently shadowed. And in these craters, we believe that there's a lot of water ice. And, water is kind of like finding gold in space because, you break up water into its two main components. You get hydrogen, which is rocket fuel. You get oxygen, which is air. Or you melt it down, which is water. So it's really this massive resource. And, if we go to the moon and we do have a colony there, we're not going to be able to send stuff from Earth all the time. It's really expensive. So you'll need to actually, have in-situ resource management. You'll have to basically get stuff from the lunar surface that you can use. And the South Pole is the best place for that. So that's why NASA and so many other countries are wanting to set up bases there.
So in the future, the South Pole of the moon could look something like the South Pole of our own planet, where different nations have bases set up and they don't necessarily proclaim sovereignty over that area. Is that an accurate comparison?
Yeah, no, it absolutely is. Yeah, I mean, if you look at Antarctica, like you say, you've got all these countries which, lay claim to areas, but, no one country has sovereignty over Antarctica, and the moon's probably going to be quite similar in a sense. And all these countries, they've actually said that they want to go specifically to a place called Shackleton Crater, which is right on the lunar South Pole. But we also have a thing called the Outer Space Treaty from the Space Age, and, that basically says in law that no one country can lay claim to any part of another celestial body, including the moon. I think the politics will come into it because, as United States and China or Russia, as they want to go to the moon too, I think we will have competing countries wanting to lay claim to certain places. So I think, those treaties from, the 60s and 70s probably will become less relevant. And I think there's going to have to be a lot of political discussion as to, how does that sovereignty work on the moon?
So on the political side of things, everyone knows that one of the main motivations for NASA to move so quickly with the lunar program in the 1960s was the ongoing space race, which was part of the larger Cold War. In the 21st century, without the looming threat of the Soviets, has the United States lost some of the motivation for ambitious space exploration projects? And do you foresee perhaps a new space race in the future, perhaps with China?
Yeah, I mean, like you say, I think the Apollo era is, it was a pinnacle in human achievement and also budgets, right? So they poured a huge amount of resource and money and people into this one program, And that allowed them to achieve their goals of Apollo. But unfortunately, I don't think the ambition of America has changed. But I think the budgets and the resources have, because it's been slashed and it's very, very different now. But like you say, you know, again, China has said that they want to go there, and they've actually proven time and time again that China is really an up-and-coming, you know, superpower in the space exploration. And they've said that they're going to land their own astronauts on the South Pole by the end of the decade. And I think that's likely. So I think now America is kind of turning back towards a mini space race in a sense. And they do want to beat China, and they do want to actually kind of get there first to prove that they still have that technological edge over other countries.
I feel like the Chinese lunar program isn't that well known, at least in the West. I didn't know much about it before I looked it up, but apparently the first rover was in 2013 and the most recent one was 2024. Do you have some information about that people might be interested to learn that they might not know about before?
Yeah, I mean, China's space exploration program has been incredibly successful. It's the Chang'e program. They've had multiple rovers, as you say. They've had lunar landers, and not only have they landed on the moon, they actually landed, collected samples, and brought those samples back to the Earth. So they've actually had samples from the far side of the moon, which is the first time any country has done that. So, yeah, they've proven that they're not only capable, but they can also do these things at speed and with a relatively small budget. So I think that's kind of, you know, nipping at the heels of the United States. And they're currently working on their lunar landers for crew, you know. So if we look at the speed of what they've done with robotic exploration, I think it's very likely that, they will probably get astronauts on the moon by the end of the decade.
Now, just coming back to the present mission, which I believe the astronauts are currently on their way back to Earth, as well as testing their equipment, the crew has made observations of the lunar surface and conducted experiments on board the craft. Presumably, the data which they've collected still needs to be analysed. Could you give us kind of a preliminary sense of what the astronauts have found so far?
Really, what they're doing is relaying just what they see, all of the differences, that, you know, how the light is falling on the moon, Earth shine as Earth's light falls on the moon. And also, you've got to remember, too, that they are seeing the far side of the moon. So that's the side that, you know, we can't see that from the Earth. It never faces us. So they're seeing things that, you know, no human has seen for over 50 years. And it's, yeah, a lot of it is just the images that we're seeing. I mean, just this morning we had the Earth rise images. So we got a lot of those images showing the Earth setting and then, you know, rising behind the moon, which is incredible. And another thing that they did, which had not been done before, is that they witnessed a solar eclipse, actually. So they saw the sun go behind the moon, took these incredible photos of that eclipse, and you can see this kind of the halo or the corona of the sun behind the moon. So there's a huge amount of observational science that they're doing. But also a lot of the data, like you say, we don't have that yet. It's a pretty slow process to get all of that back, but a lot of this we will get basically once they arrive and once they've actually downlinked all of the data, you know, got the hard drives, got the memory cards, a lot of it's going to come after they get back to Earth.
I'm just struggling to visualize the solar eclipse. You mean they were on the dark side of the moon and the sun was covered from their perspective by the moon and they were in complete darkness?
Yeah, so when they went around the far side of the moon, Earth basically disappeared. So it went behind the moon for about just under an hour. And once they then re-entered or could see the Earth again, it rose again. And then at that point, as they continued to orbit around the moon back towards the Earth, the sun then went behind the moon. So they actually witnessed a solar eclipse from the moon. It's really amazing. The photos are on NASA's website. They just came out a few hours ago. And they're really incredible because you can see the dark side of the moon, which is actually slightly illuminated by the Earth, glow from the Earth essentially, and then you can see the glow of the sun behind it. It's really incredible. It looks unreal.
That was astronomer Josh Araki from Stardome Observatory.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.